Hey, this is Daryl Etherington, and I'm here with
Anthony Ha,
who is about to go down under. He's leaving for Australia.
Correct. We are recording a daily earlier than usual, and that's because as soon as we finish recording, I'm going to head to the airport and head down to Sydney for our Battlefield event next week.
Yeah, yeah, he's going to go throw some shrimp on the barbie. That's not close.
That's, I mean, not a thing that any actual Australian person has said to me, and that was also not a good accent.
Right. Anyways, this podcast is called Original Content. It has nothing to do with accents or impersonations. What is it, Anthony?
Well, I mean, sometimes you break out accents, but the main goal is to cover the week's streaming news and then do a review of a new show or movie on a streaming service. I mean, we sometimes branch out into more broad sort of entertainment, media, technology news, but that's kind of the focus. This week, we're going to be reviewing Runaways, which is the new Marvel show on Hulu. And since that doesn't come out until November
21st,
yes, we are going to do the review entirely spoiler-free.
Yeah, but we got some pretty early access to the screeners. Just to get you more hyped, I guess, about this show, about this new Marvel show, or the contrary, who knows? We haven't shared our opinion yet. You have to listen.
Right. It will be a twist.
Yeah. Okay. So you want to jump right into the news? What kind of stories were happening this week?
Well, I think the one that was the one that certainly got my attention the most was this story in Variety, which is not confirmed yet. That Amazon and Warner Brothers are in negotiation for a TV adaptation of The Lord of the Rings.
Yes, I did. I saw this, and I also saw a lot of chatter about it online. I mean, I saw it on our website, obviously, but also a lot of people commenting on. Oh wait, did we post about this? Maybe we didn't.
No, I don't think we did. Yeah, okay. I think you and I were both busy, and so it slipped through the cracks. Also, it wasn't like confirmed. So, right. You know. Yeah.
But I did see a lot of buzz.
I assume that if it does happen, we'll be writing quite a bit about it. But right now, it's very early.
Yeah. And we got other gifts to write about. Like, we're busy.
Yeah, totally.
I saw a lot of buzz about it. I saw one of the things that I saw that was most interesting was this like long diatribe about there's plenty of other fantasy titles to mine that people haven't touched yet in terms of books, and that this is kind of played or could be played territory.
Right. I think there's something to that, and then especially given that the last thing that we got on screen of The Lord of the Rings was an adaptation, or in that universe, was the 3-movie version of The Hobbit, which I don't think left a great taste in anyone's mouth. I mean, I think people were just kind of like, oh, that's fine, I guess.
Yeah, it was. I liked it. I mean, but I didn't love it. It wasn't a thing where I was like, this is great. But I also... I read the Silmarillion or whatever and loved it.
Silmarillion, I think.
Silmarillion. I don't know how to pronounce it. That's one of those words.
It's made up.
It's also a fake word. That's true. But yeah, a lot of people, even fans, aren't huge fans of that book in particular.
Right.
But I also played, and I've just finished playing the most recent, the Shadow of War series, and then Shadow of Mordor, I guess, was the original one.
Oh, okay.
And that's all kind of like extended universe, creative backstory with some basis in like the original Tolkien myths, but a lot of liberties taken, I guess.
Yeah.
And I find it great. I find it very compelling, not very much for the gameplay, but more so for the story. A lot of people criticize the story too, but it's one of those things where it's kind of like Star Wars lore to me, where when I was a kid, I read a lot of extended universe Star Wars books, which are now non-canon garbage or whatever. And they weren't quality books by any stretch of the imagination. Some of them maybe, but most of them were not. Like I probably read, I think I counted once and it was like 36 or something.
Jeez.
Yeah. And it was like popcorn stuff, but it was just the fact that it was in that universe and I was like obsessed with it. I think there's plenty of fertile territory for people to go with like, series based around Lord of the Rings mythos. Even just taking Shadow of Mordor and making that into a show would probably work pretty well, and especially in the hands of competent writers. But I don't know. I do get the point that, like, you know, don't just keep going back to this well because it's a well that has resonance beyond kind of the very small insular community of fantasy fans.
Right. It seems like, because so part of the context here is that, you know, it's been pretty widely reported that Jeff Bezos has sort of laid down the law at Amazon Studios that he doesn't want to be making sort of these, you know, quote unquote niche TV series like Transparent, and instead, you know, going for these big swings that have put the potential to be a Game of Thrones style hit. And to me, that's a much more interesting idea if it's about taking something that maybe is beloved by fantasy fans, but isn't, you know, known to the wider culture yet, and turning it into this lavish production versus just like taking, it's like, hey, you like Lord of the Rings, right? You know Lord of the Rings, let's do that again. And I think part of it is because, and again, this is very early, so it may play out in a lot of different ways, but if they were doing something set in Middle Earth, but it wasn't just telling the story of the Lord of the Rings again, that's more interesting than if they're basically just adapting the Lord of the Rings again and saying, well, you know, all the stuff that Peter Jackson cut out of the movies, we're just going to put those on TV.
Yeah, that would be bad. Because I think if there's a complaint about Lord of the Rings, if it's that it was a bit ponderous or, you know, like the movies, right? Like they took their time to get there, even though the books obviously took tons of time, but that's a different media, a different format.
Right.
Yeah, I could see, and you could see how you could do a very Game of the Thrones style interpretation of like what was going on in the books. Like there's a lot left unsaid and a lot of relationships that aren't necessarily fully explored that they could explore in that more modern, more kind of soap opera-y way.
Right.
If they wanted to, which I hope they don't want to, because that sounds like it would be bad.
Yeah. It's just, or it's going to be like just all Tom Bombadil all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't they just do a Tom Bombadil show called
Right, who's Bombadil. A character sort of famously cut out of the Fellowship of the Ring, which everyone sort of agrees is like, okay, we may not agree with every decision that Peter Jackson made, but we agree that Tom Bombadil does not belong on screen because he's basically just like a hippie who like sings.
Yeah, it would have been a weird inclusion, I think, would have thrown off the kind of tone of the whole thing overall. Yeah, but I don't know. Even if they did do just a straight up like, oh, it's a miniseries version, I would probably still watch it. Even though,
yeah, I would. I mean, you know, again, if we're still in this podcast, we would definitely like check it out. And like, even if not, I would watch at least the first episode or two just because I'd be curious about it. And I do think, I mean, I think The Lord of the Rings is certainly a book. There's not, I think that Peter Jackson did a great job of turning them into movies, but they don't have to be seen as the definitive version of it. And
no, that's true.
And that somebody could do something completely different, and that would be interesting too. But I'm just, you know, it's just like, if this is your big bet, I'm like, oh, fine.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a thing where I also feel like, despite people criticizing and saying there are lots of other things that could use interpretations and would do great with that, and I think that's true. Like,
yeah,
Lord of the Rings has achieved that status where it's like, it's basically every generation gets to reinterpret it, or even within a generation, right? Like it's kind of beyond, I think, the
right
I mean, it's in a new level, a new tier. Yeah. Along with maybe, I don't know, I'm trying to think of what else fits that category that's like kind of like myths, I guess, modern myths, or
right, people talk about that with like superheroes and stuff like that
could be interesting, but I think pretty early still these days, right? No deal has been set, so...
Right. Yeah. No announcement, no sense of what the creative team would be, which would probably be the most important question.
Yeah, exactly. So after that, what else have we got going on? Should we move on to the next topic?
Yeah, let's do it. So then there's also, you know, I think probably right at the beginning of this pod of, you know, our first episode of original content, we were talking about Netflix acquiring Millerworld, and which is a comics publisher, but like clearly a lot of the comics have been adapted into TV, so that was clearly on Netflix's mind, and they've announced their first project, which you wrote about, called The Magic Order.
Yes, that's right. And it is, I guess, maybe a bit of a surprise that it's a comic first. Like, and I say that mostly because I feel like if it had been, oh, this was something that was in the works already, like where Netflix would just pick this up and put it out, that would make one kind of sense. But it sounds like this was pretty early, because Millar in his tweet was saying, like, you know, or in the article about this, sorry, where he had the interview, was saying like, oh, it's great that Netflix has brought on this artist and everything. So it was just like concept. And maybe it was, again, part of the deal that if they wanted to bring Millar Productions and Millar World, again, shit, right. I keep mispronouncing his name, or...
Wait, no, didn't we? We decided, oh. we like Googled this, and both pronunciations, Mark Miller or Mark Millar, are both correct, I think.
That's right, that's right. Yeah, but maybe it was a condition of his joining up that they still work on these passion projects that he has on the side. But
right, and I think like from like a PR perspective, I think, yeah, just like to buy the comics publisher and then never actually publish any comics would probably look pretty bad.
Right, because that's what people are fans of him for to begin with, right, is the comics for the most part.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess what remains to be, it was still, I was surprised to see the news, but then I guess the other question is, to what extent is Netflix gonna make a real serious push to turn this into a successful comic versus just kind of putting it out there and then, you know, in a year or two potentially seeing, you know, a Magic Order TV series or movie,
yeah,
which is maybe what the real interest is.
Yeah. And they're doing, because they're doing like traditional distribution, right? Like they're doing print distribution.
Right.
And I feel like it's brand new for them, obviously. So are they going to take the time to kind of learn how to do that well and try? Or is it just kind of like, this is an insignificant cost for us and we'll get it out there. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't, but it's almost like a vanity publishing just to make sure Millar feels happy about this. And then we'll do other creative projects. But I guess, I mean, maybe it'll depend on the reception. Also, I'm curious about the digital distribution, because presumably, I mean, I have no idea how they probably would have to work with Amazon on that, since that's kind of like Comixology is like the main distribution channel for most digital comics, right?
Right. And Comixology is now owned by Amazon.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you know, I guess one of the things also is that Netflix at this point is such a big company that what for Netflix is not necessarily a big promotional push might still feel like a big promotional push in the world of comics.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Although, I mean, like Marvel now has budget behind it, right, to do whatever.
Right, right, right. But especially when you're not talking about DC or Marvel.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that's
true. I mean, not to say that, like, you know, publishers like Image and Dark Horse don't have, you know, big successful titles, but I just think, like, the scale of what success looks like in the comics world is so much smaller than what it looks like in movies or TV.
Yeah, yeah.
But a successful comic has, like, you know, sells, like, let's say, you know, 40,000 or 80,000 copies, which, you know, if those were the viewing numbers on, I think, a new Netflix show, they would not be thrilled about that.
No, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think that could actually become the most interesting part of the story is like if Netflix does something innovative around distribution, that would be neat. It'd be cool to see them try. It would be too awkward though. I was going to say if they could like distribute it via their own platform, but I think that would require a lot of gymnastics.
To have like a good reading experience.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Or it would just be like a dumb sort of like click here to like download a PDF, and that doesn't seem very exciting.
No, yeah. They could just go acquire one of the countless CBR reading apps available on the App Store and then rebrand it if they wanted to.
There you go. That's what they should do.
Yeah, they should put me in charge of their comic strategy. It's a good idea. But also, okay, let's talk about the content of this, because that's, I think, probably more interesting.
I mean, you know, it's one of those things that, I'm not sure if it is the most interesting thing about this, but...
That's what I mean. Interesting in that it sounds like it kind of blows.
Right.
Because it's like, it's somebody posted an image to Twitter in response that was like, cast photo, and it was a picture of the cast from Now You See Me. Because it literally sounds like Now You See Me, except perhaps stupider, maybe. Have you seen any of those movies?
I've seen Now You See Me 2.
But not the first one.
No, we got invited to like see that and then interview the director of Now You See Me 2, which you can watch on TechCrunch.
Okay.
And like... It's fine. It's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination.
Did you feel that you missed out terribly by not having seen the first one?
No, not in any way.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's like, I don't know. So the whole premise, let's describe it then, I guess, for people who aren't familiar with Now You See Me or this thing. But it's like a group of magicians, are working together. They're a family. But they're also not known to be a family. Like there's a secret family or something, and they all have different jobs that are real normal jobs in the normal world like we live in now. But then they're secretly also magicians, and I think that's like a real magicians that do real magic,
right? Not like stage magicians.
Yeah, and then they fight some people trying to kill them, like individually targeting them specifically, and trying to knock them out one by one. So they have this secret war. It's like Harry Potter, if Harry Potter was like an adult cool guy thing, like in the Millar way of making things adult and cool in the way that he did want it. That's my reading of it. And I'm reading pretty far into it because there's not that much detail.
Right.
Just the detail. The basic plot is group of magicians. They're related in some way. They're secretly magicians and they do ordinary jobs and they're fighting these people trying to kill them. That's the basic
thing. Yeah. I mean, I will say that the difference between that and Now You See Me is there's a really big one, which is just that the Now You See Me movies don't have, you know, they don't pretend that it's real magic.
What? I thought they did. I thought that was the whole thing at the end of the...
Nope. Oh. Well, I haven't seen the first one, but in the second one, it's definitely all meant to be stage magic. That's, well, with the exception of like hypnotism, like is I think supposed to actually work. But for the most part, it's people doing, you know, using sleight of hand and things like that. And like in this way where you're like, I don't think stage magic really works like that, but not that they're pretending it's real magic.
Okay. But maybe I haven't seen the first one either, but I thought that the whole thing was at the end of it. They were like, or is magic real? And then it was.
Okay. Well, if so, that threat is not in the second movie in any form.
Well, then it probably isn't in the first one either.
Right. You were just so desperate for there to be some.
I just
kind
wanted
of,
there to be magic, so yeah.
Yeah. Well, because the idea of like, you know, people fighting crime with stage magic just seems so silly that you sort of imposed your own slightly more plausible reading on it.
Yes. Yeah. And that sounds like such a terrible. I'm sure they're fine. I'm sure they're fine movies. One day I'll see them, maybe. Except I don't like so many of the people involved in the cast.
Wait,
because we already talked about Woody Harrelson. He's in it, right?
Woody Harrelson's in it. Jesse Eisenberg's in it.
I also hate Jesse Eisenberg, so that's two.
Right. Dave Franco's in it.
I like Dave Franco.
In the first one, it's Isla Fisher. I don't know how to pronounce her name. And then in the second one, she's replaced by someone whose name I'm totally blanking on right now. But yeah, that's basically the cast.
Do they acknowledge the replacement?
Yeah. It's a different character. But in this way, that's very perfunctory. She's like, oh yeah, that other lady, she left.
Yeah. Like, oh, she's dead now. She's always been dead. Let's move on.
I appreciate that they didn't make her dead. I think that's like a dumb, you know, just a dumb kind of mean way to treat a character. But yeah, they didn't necessarily put a lot of thought into it.
Okay. I'm going to watch.
She didn't want this life anymore or something like that.
Oh, she just got out of the game.
Yeah.
Because if it's fighting crime and doing crime?
It's a thin line. It's not super clear. The whole thing is very silly.
It's just such a weird premise. Like, who is thinking, you know what people love? Stage magic. Have them do the... Like, it's not... I don't know. It's not the height of stage magic anymore to me, in my mind. Like, it's not the days of David Blaine and David Copperfield.
Right.
And all the Davids that do magic. Right. And Chris Angel. Those times have gone, right?
Right. Here, I'll give you... To give you one sense of, like... the way the plotting of these movies works, or at least the second one works, I'll spoil a little bit, which is that at one point, all the characters are trying to like make their getaway from like this, like, I forget exactly what happens, but they're trying to get away for some reason. They go down this like pipe, and then when they arrive, they are suddenly no longer in the U.S. They're in Hong Kong.
What?
And so you're like, how did that happen? That's crazy. That must be magic. And then it was, but it was like the dumbest thing. Apparently the pipe had these symbols painted inside that hypnotized them so that they basically passed out and then they woke up when they were in Hong Kong,
when they'd been
transported to Hong Kong by their enemy.
It's like a B.A. Baracus move. Like, I'm not going on that plane. Here, drink your milk, B.A. And then they drug the milk, and then they take him on the plane. And then right. He's like, how did I get here? You drove. You drove. Don't you remember?
Yeah. It's, and that's the, I mean, and they don't tell you that for a little while. So, I mean, it's treated as like this, like, oh, you didn't think of that. And it's like, that's true. It literally would never have occurred to me.
Because it sucks. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we kind of got far afield from Netflix and Mark Miller, Millar.
I think it's to the point, though. I just feel like it's going to be very hard to make that comic good. But, I mean, and you've said you don't like him in the past, so you probably aren't very optimistic about his chances. No.
I mean, this one I might read just because it's the first thing from Netflix, so I just, you know, would like to have an opinion, an informed opinion, rather than just sort of talking shit under my breath. But
we have to do it too for this thing, because we haven't talked about any comics yet, and I'd love to talk about that.
Right.
I'd love to talk about, at one point we should talk about Valiant High too. Danielle Kibble-Smith wrote it. It's like an original for Comixology.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we should talk about that. I randomly had drinks with Danielle Kibble-Smith one time, and we follow each other on Twitter. So maybe he'd even come on the show. Who knows?
Oh, my goodness. We follow each other on Twitter, too. Oh, wow. This world.
I know.
Danielle, if you listen to this.
I didn't know you were going to bring it up, and so that was my natural response, is to be an obnoxious name dropper.
Good.
But, because he is great on Twitter, and I just always, whenever I see him, and, like, he's also, you know, a writer, or, you know, for Stephen Colbert, like, it's just this weird thing, like, how do I know this guy again? That's weird.
Yes, but all which is to say, good, great comic, you should read it, and we'll talk about it, probably, maybe next week. Okay. Well, not next week, because you're...
Sure, talk about it next week. I won't be here. Do whatever you want. You can talk about literally anything, and I would not care. Not true. If you talked about me the whole time, I'd feel great about it.
Yeah, you'll be enjoying your dingoes down in Australia.
All right, let's talk about our last news story, which is, oh God, another one where I never get the, I'm sure about the pronunciation, Niantic or Niantic?
I think it's Niantic.
Niantic, following up Pokemon Go with a Harry Potter AR game next year.
Yes, and my Alexa is just talking, so you might hear that in the background, but it's lost because it's not connected to the internet, so it just keeps calling out, sadly. Anyways, yeah, so Niantic is doing this with a WB Games, and WB Games is spinning up a new sub-imprint to manage this, I forget what it's called, it's like a reference to the Harry Potter universe or whatever. But they're going to be doing like all Harry Potter Wizarding World games basically. And there's no real details. Like, this is basically just an announcement of intent to do something in future. Me speculating wildly, I just think it makes a lot of sense for them to take, and based on the very few details they have released, which are just that there's going to be wizarding and there's going to be sort of like, AR gameplay and like casting spells and stuff like that. It sounds a lot like Ingress, which is Niantic's first AR game. Not a branded thing, their own branding, not a licensed content thing.
But
it's basically like a real world spy thriller with like a sci-fi vibe to it.
Right.
Like, you go around and you like capture spots and you attack spots owned by the other team and stuff like that. And you can see how that would translate well to like the Harry Potter experience if you just kind of glossed over it, like this wizarding world conflict happening out in the real world under the eyes of the muggles,
yeah, exactly, like the Harry Potter concepts. I mean, obviously it's just incredibly popular and like, you know, it's this, you know, all ages friendly concept, but it also seems really well suited to this augmented reality, you know, location based approach, because it's all about this sort of secret world of wizards that's like underneath the real world. And so I can imagine that translating really, really well into a, you know, Pokemon Go style or, you know, Ingress style game.
Yeah. And it's funny that you made that mistake, because that's also true, that Pokemon Go is very much like Ingress as well. It's a bit different, but it uses a lot of the same underlying architecture, and like the gyms are, I forget, direct analogs to something in Ingress in terms of these points that you kind of capture and hold and stuff like that. So, it's smart. It's like It makes a ton of sense for Niantic in terms of like what they can do with what they've already built, without, you know, a huge amount of effort in terms of reinventing the wheel. So, and again, we don't know exactly what it'll look like. It could look very, very, very different. But it's funny too, because this was actually like reported earlier, like last year, and then it was people that like they said it was a false rumor or whatever, but it's clearly been in the works for a while, and now they've kind of worked it out, whatever the deal was that they needed to do to get it going, and they're gonna put it out. So, and I'm curious too, because the interesting thing about Pokemon Go is that Nintendo recently said, you know, this was not good for us, like it was not really worth our time, despite the massive downloads and like the many in-app purchases and the huge user group. Like just in terms of the way they do business, it didn't make sense for them in the end.
Right. Huh. I know they said that about Mario, the Mario iOS game. I didn't realize they said that about Pokemon Go as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, unless I'm getting them confused, but maybe it was Mario Run. But anyways, yeah, I don't know. I'm just curious for a WB, it's totally different. Like, I think for them, it makes all the sense in the world. Like their interests are primarily in like making the most out of this IP, right? Not in selling video games or anything.
Right.
Like
that. Well, and it's sort of this interesting time in like where the films, the actual Harry Potter films, have run their course, but then they're like trying to bring it back through this Fantastic Beasts film series, which I think has done well, not necessarily as well as the Harry Potter movies, but pretty well. And so I would definitely imagine that there would be like tie-ins and things like that and ways to try to promote that aspect of the franchise as well.
Yeah, they need to kind of, if they want to like keep the momentum going, right, and capitalize on kind of like this broad affection for the IP that they have, I think they do need to kind of like push the pedal in all areas and get it out there. Because it seems like they're now at this point, the long-term goal of Rowling and like the whole Harry Potter brand and WB is to like blow this up, make it a Disney style property with like lasting appeal, right?
But right.
So I'm pumped about that. I probably will play it for like 2 days and then stop playing it like I do all the other things, but sure.
I'll probably do what I did with Pokemon Go, which is that I won't play it myself, but I'll like tag along with people when they're playing and ask them, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing now? What are you doing now? What does that mean?
Yeah, that's the best way to experience everything is secondhand.
I mean, just because, yeah, there are aspects of it that I just find like so obnoxious. Like when people are like, no, I can't go, like, I can't like leave yet. I need to like, you know.
Oh, get this one. Oh, yeah. I hate that.
Like, come on, we need to catch this train. Like, what is wrong with you?
I've actually done that before too, which is a sad, but yeah, I did it like when I first started playing it. And there was a nice little time when like me and Tara would walk around and walk the dog and like play the game, which was kind of fun. And run into other people playing the game. Because it was I remember at launch, you could just like walk around and there would just be these clumps of people everywhere that were actually playing the game. So it was nice in a way. And we would talk to them and like be humans for a little while. But it was also weird. And
yeah.
Ultimately too weird.
I mean, I guess I'm more likely to try this out because I you know, I'm a much more of a fan of Harry Potter than I am of Pokemon, which I mean is maybe a weird thing for a 34-year-old man to say anyway, to be comparing the two. But like, yeah, I mean, I just read all the Harry Potter books, seen most of the movies and really like them. Whereas like Pokemon was never something I really cared about. So maybe I'll actually play this
one. We don't want to get into a fandom fight here because I am the exact opposite. And I love Pokemon. I'm holding right now in my hands the Pokeball Nintendo 2DS XL,
right,
which just came out in Canada.
But you're like, you know, clenching your hand into a fist because you're furious that I'm
exactly
not affording Pokemon the proper respect.
Yes, you better respect it. This thing's beautiful, by the way. It has, on the front of it, there's a button, like the button to release the Pokeball. And even though it doesn't do anything at all, it's still a pressable button. Like, it's just a decoration on the cover of it. Nintendo makes amazing collectible garbage that I buy and then never use. They're very good at that.
Wow. Yeah, they should put that on the packaging.
Yeah, they should. Okay, cool. So we're all excited for that. I still am excited for it. I like Harry Potter, even though I like Pokemon more. And yeah, is that the news?
That's the news. Yeah, let's jump into our review of Runaways. So this is based on the Marvel series that was created by Brian K. Vaughan and Adrian Alfona, I guess. I hope that I'm pronouncing that right.
I think so.
Which is about these teenagers who they find out, you know, that this is, you know, basically the concept of it, so we're not exactly spoiling it, that their parents are essentially supervillains. And the show isn't necessarily about them running away per se. As I understand it, in the comics, they do actually like run away fairly quickly, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they do. I think this kind of like compresses a lot of the events of the comics and gets into some later arc stuff, actually.
Right, right. Whereas I think in the show, it's more like they find out this sort of horrible secret about their parents, but they're just trying, you know, at least in what we've seen, it's more than about their reaction to it as opposed to immediately, you know, rebelling against their parents.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't think any of that is spoilery, but I would hesitate to go into too much detail about what they find out or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, I think that's fair. So Daryl, you've read the comics?
Not consistently. I would say in and out, and over the years I've read a few of them, like a good amount, probably like a dozen or more issues at least. But it was a series I enjoyed. And I think it ended up having ties into like Young Avengers and some other things too. But it created some good characters as well. It kind of has like it's like a YA thing, right? Like,
right.
It feels very much like Marvel going, oh, let's build some kind of a YA story that appeals to these younger readers. And this is what the result was. And the TV show feels similar.
It does. Okay. Yeah. Cause I just think that's such a great concept for a comic and a show.
Yeah, it is. And it was much needed. Like it was like, especially when it first launched, it was very unique in terms of being something that was appealing to that group and that wasn't just like teen white male power fantasy, which is basically 90% of the rest of comics.
Right.
It had a diverse cast at a time when that was unusual in comics. It still is unusual. I shouldn't say that, but
right, things have changed, but I mean still the default is you know, white men and women.
Yeah, and but Runaways was early to that, and it was early to this kind of. Now there's a lot of attempt to like reach out to that younger audience. There are a number of characters. There's the new Ms. Marvel is a good example,
right? Which is a great comic.
Yes, it is a great comic. I don't think Squirrel Girl is in this category. Also a terrific comic, but sort of a different kind of appeal.
Right.
Really, really great though. Ryan North is signing something tonight at the Beguiling, their latest issue of that, by the way. But no, none of you will care because this is in the past, and also I'm talking about Toronto.
Right. This is great, great, good stuff.
Yeah, it was great. Maybe
and, it will have been great.
yeah, exactly. I'm blanking on like other specific titles, but there's a lot. DC has like a whole series of digitals that are kind of aimed at younger audiences and younger female audiences. There's Avengers Academy is another one. Runaways was early, and Runaways probably one of the better examples too.
Overall. Yeah. While we're talking about younger audiences, I have to say that one of the things that a sort of horrifying thought that occurred to me this morning as I was thinking about, you know, just doing the show was if you look at the cast, right, there's sort of the parents and there's the teenagers.
Yeah.
And the teenagers, as in typical Hollywood style, they're usually played by people in their late teens or early 20s. And then, the TV version is created by Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage, who previously did Gossip Girl. And as in Gossip Girl, the older generation is also, you know, fairly young and attractive looking.
Yeah.
And in fact, most of the actors are in their late 30s or early 40s to mid 40s, let's say. Which means that essentially we're way closer in age to the parents than we are to the kids in this show.
We definitely are. And I don't know if that affected. So They did a really good job. One of the things that the show does that is not present, at least in the early comics, is so full disclosure, I've only watched the first two episodes this far. But the first two episodes are evenly split, nearly down the middle. I think they give a little more time to the teens because they give them some time in the second episode. But the bulk of the second episode is devoted to giving the parents perspective, right?
Right. Which in a way that I think, we don't want to go into too many details, but the way they do that, I don't think it's necessarily there's any big twists when you see the parents' perspective, but just when you realize, oh, this episode is going to be about the parents, and you realize how it's going to be about the parents, is a pretty fun, surprising moment.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I like the narrative structure a lot, actually. So my point was just when you say we're closer to the older ones, I found myself maybe enjoying the adult storyline a little better, or identifying with it. Whereas, Once Upon a Time, and maybe even when I was originally reading Runaways, I was a little bit closer to being able to identify with the teens, and now it's I get it. Adult problems, I get it.
Right, right. And we should say, I think that's actually, I don't know how much of this is from the comics, but one of the things, Gossip Girl is a show that I loved intensely. I basically watched the entire first season in one night. But I think is garbage. I think it's some of the most, intensely pleasurable garbage that I've ever experienced. And not always, I don't mean garbage, but just it's junk food, maybe is a better word for it. Yeah. Right. And I think Runaways, could go in a lot of different directions about how much it embraces that. One of the things it does carry from Gossip Girl is that it's equally interested in both generations. And some of that can start to feel kind of silly, where you have, 40-year-old adults acting like they're horny teenagers. But sometimes it, I think, really just gives this complexity to it, where it's not just about, your parents are evil and you must defeat them, and instead it's that they have their reasons and they feel conflicted.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what they're doing seems pretty messed up.
Yeah, and that's a good point. So you just, because I think you basically just said the tagline for the comic, or what could have been described as the tagline for the comic, which is your parents are evil and you have to defeat them. It was a pretty solid binary, and it was clearly designed to resonate with teens who are feeling rebellious towards their overseers, but in a way that kind of exaggerated that to the extreme, right? And they did do, again, I don't know, it doesn't seem like they're doing this in this the exact same mechanic in the film versus, or in the TV show versus the comics, but in the comics they have a clever sort of workaround to deal with the obvious emotional complexity of that.
Right.
Well, not to absolve it, but to mitigate it, I guess you would say. But it's great. It's compelling. It's a compelling motivation for both the kids, and then now also, since the adults are fully fleshed out characters in the show, the adults too. So I'm curious to see how it plays out going forward. But so far so good. At least, how many episodes did you watch?
I've seen three. So Hulu gave us four episodes that we could review. But since we're recording a little early and it's been kind of a busy week, I didn't get to watch all four.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Same.
But I would say, I would say roughly, they're all roughly equivalent in quality. I don't think there's any big, and they're all up till that point, very, very serialized. It's not one of those shows where they establish a premise and then they tell different stories. It's all one story so far.
Yeah, it's hugely story driven, single story macro driven. The place where I thought it was in the first episode, I felt it was in danger of going a bit off the rails in terms of just being, having so many characters to deal with.
Yeah.
But in the end, I thought they did a good job of that too.
I remember at one point when they were still introducing kids, and I was many of these kids am I supposed to remember?
Yeah, exactly. Because there are a lot of them. I forget how many are in the main crew there. Six, seven?
Yeah, yeah. And I will say, by the way, if you don't want to be spoiled for the show, which I think probably what they're just doing is pulling stuff that you already know about the characters from the comics, don't read the Wikipedia entry of descriptions of the characters, because some like crucial details that we have not gotten to in the show are already in the character descriptions on Wikipedia. So yeah. I was trying to use Wikipedia to try to, you know, keep track of who was who, and I accidentally sort of spoiled myself.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't read the comics either, obviously. But
right,
if you prefer to see the show, I mean, depends, yeah. Right? Yeah, but I like it. Also, it's like the other thing I was thinking about when I was watching it was that it feels more like Legion than it does like. And this is a terrible example because it's so garbage, but like Inhumans, right? Right. Even like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It feels like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of like it has story-driven elements, but part of it is like a Freak of the Week type vibe.
Right, yeah.
And this is more like, you know, a considered like thought-out story like Legion, but not as off the wall or auteur style or like, you know, like original as Legion.
Right, right.
Which we've not talked about it on here, but I love Legion. I don't know about you.
I've only seen the first episode, which I really liked, but I just haven't had the time to watch the rest of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was great. And I mean, I think, yeah, like it's similar in the sense that I feel like it's taking this sort of superhero template and then letting people, you know, kind of do their own style with it, as opposed to, I think, both Inhumans and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I think has, you know, definitely has its moments, but both of them are like very kind of bland, I think.
Yeah.
And done in this sort of straight ahead, you know,
more TV, like traditional action, TV. Eventual.
Yeah, they're very traditional. And I mean, it's interesting because I think Runaways also, my sense is that it doesn't feel like a show with a huge budget, but it just gets a lot of mileage for what it has. So that like, I don't think that there are some moments where you get some like special effects, which I think are not ideal. And you know, it seems like it's mostly just shot, you know, in random locations around LA.
Yeah.
But it's just shot in a way that I don't think it's like as beautiful or striking as Legion, but it just has a sense of personality and style that I think some of the other, the ABC Marvel shows don't.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it does a good job of like, not papering over, but just making you unconcerned about kind of some of the shortfalls it has in terms of FX and other stuff, right? Where you could see how it would be better if they had more money to spend on it, but you don't mind because of the way that they've done it.
Yeah. But I also, to your early point, I do agree that the teenage character, I mean, I was interested in that central predicament, but in terms of the individual characters, I mean, I think the adults are definitely more interesting than the kids.
Yeah, that could change over time.
Like, there's like this like romantic triangle among the teenagers that I am just not invested in at all. I think all the three characters are fine. I don't have any complaints about them, but like, and that I think also gets played up a bit more in the third episode. But like, I just like, I'm like, I don't care like who ends up with who. This is not a thing. Whereas like when like some of the romantic twists with the adults, I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. It was more driven. I think, I mean, maybe that's just part of it. It's kind of like, it feels kind of accurate, right? In that it feels like the teens have things that they think are high stakes or like are significant or complex, but in reality they don't have a firm understanding of that because they're still teens.
Right.
Whereas the adults have a lot more complexities because they are adults and their lives are far more complex, right?
Right. And I mean, one of the things that's I mean, I think can be compelling and is, I mean, reasonably well done, but is a little bit frustrating too, is that the kids just aren't that smart. And so when they're trying to figure out what is going on and trying to outsmart their parents, their plans for that are not very good, which I think is totally how that would play out. But it's sort of frustrating to watch when you're like, oh, this is obviously a terrible plan. Why are you doing this?
Yeah. That might be the biggest challenge of it going forward, is how they do that and how they mount it as like the kids as a credible opposition to the parents. A credible threat, I guess. But.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, do you think you're gonna keep watching?
For sure, I'm gonna keep watching. For sure, I think actually too. I compared it to a few other things, but I should have compared it to what is the stupid X-Men show on ABC called?
The Gifted.
Gifted. I think that's like the closest comparison in terms of that one. That one also skews a little more to like that one. Honestly, that one feels a lot like Heroes and not in a good way.
Yeah.
But it has some of the same elements in that there's like a group of young people with powers trying to figure it out and they're dealing with family issues and stuff. But this feels like just such a far better version of that, just a far more compelling version of that because of individual characterization in part and because of that whole, the split is much more, it's nice in that it's like clearly defined at the start so you know what the sides are, but they do add some complexity to each two to like about the motivations. But yeah, it's like I think that we're starting to see this like stratification of like the Marvel cinematic and TV universe, and there are clear winners and clear losers, and I would say so far Runaways for me is a clear winner. So
right, I mean, I think like that's also a little bit confused because, you know, there's the Marvel, the stuff that like including Runaways, which is done in the Marvel universe, and you know, under the auspices of Marvel Studios, albeit not under the movie division, versus a lot of the X-Men stuff where it's basically Fox,
yeah, that's
separately
true,
trying to create their own universe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It is very confusing unless Disney acquires Fox as
right, which is a news item that we did not talk about, but yeah, that's that apparently was on the table and is no longer being discussed, but you know, could happen, who knows.
Yeah that's right. And maybe it is, I mean, in some cases it's representative of that split, it's like this is what's going on, but then in some others it's not, right? Like Inhumans is Marvel Studios being idiots, it's not nothing to do with Fox being bad at their jobs, right
exactly. I mean, I think yeah, it seems like people have done good work and bad work under both studios. I mean, I think in general, it seems like quality control is something that Marvel's been pretty good at, which is part of the reason, which, I mean, I think like in some ways you almost wish that they would have sort of weirder, crazier stuff. Mm-hmm. But they're like pretty good at just being like, you never get something like, even like the worst of the movies, like Thor the Dark World, I think is not a terrible movie. It's just kind of a mediocre movie. Whereas I think the quality control at Fox is not as good.
Yeah.
But you know, Marvel allowed Inhumans to be made, so who can say?
Yeah, I guess that is really their only incredibly bad strike thus far.
Right. Again, I haven't
besides
seen
besides maybe Iron Fist, yeah.
Yeah.
But same guy, so.
Same guy, yeah. Cool guy. yeah, and I mean, I think when we talked about Inhumans, I was like trying to like go on this long thing about like how, I don't have anything against Scott Buck personally, I just don't think he should be making superhero shows, and maybe I'll just repeat that now, but yeah, I mean, I think getting back to Runaways, I just think like it's such a surprisingly great fit of like the, as somebody who again was, you know, a fan of Josh Schwartz, but like also saw some of like his shortcomings, just to see him bring the same approach to Runaways, but not just turn it into like Gossip Girl with superheroes.
Yeah.
I think, it's been like really cool. I think like it feels like a perfect, it feels very, all of it kind of, all the, not everything works, but all the elements like feel like they belong on the same show. It's not like they're trying to impose this style that doesn't really make sense or for these characters.
Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of thinking that it was going to go that way. Like it was just going to be, it would be like almost more like Archie. Like where the focus was not so much on the original IP, but on creating a new style, a new Gossip Girl or a new show in that genre. And it's not that, right? Like you mentioned, like there is the love triangle or whatever.
Right.
But it's not at all the focus, and it's not like, yeah, they're not just like, I don't know, being teens all the time. Right. Like,
right. Well, and I think the other thing is that the plotting is a lot more deliberate. It feels like, again, it's hard to say with only a few episodes like watched, but it feels like, whereas a lot of these sort of more CW style, like soap opera style shows. Like they just burn through plot like crazy. Like, you know, Gossip Girl at its peak. And I think that was part of what was great about it was like, just like crazy things would happen every episode. And I think Runaways feels much more character based where like they're really still, you know, three episodes in this moment of like, what the heck is going on? And the character's trying to, you know, just grapple with like the fallout of what happens in the first episode.
Yeah. Yeah. While also still, and yeah, they're doing that and they're like drawing it out and they're complicating, I guess, the main conflict versus the comics, but they kept a lot of the appeal. Like it's still that same conceit and that's what drove Runaways. And like why, what made it such a good thing was like this main setup. This like the opposition was not like, your regular heroes versus equally powerful, super bad people that were, that are villains, right? And that are established as villains. It's like this split between like the old and the you, or the old and the young, but
right
in the same family. I mean, yeah, it's cool. That's what makes it for me, and I'm glad it's in there. And yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel
otherwise,
like, I
mean, it could just be like basically, well, why isn't this just the X-Men origin story all over again? Right.
Right. Right. Oh, I guess one other thing I wanted to ask you about was, you know, one of the elements from the comics that I think is not a spoiler to say is there is a dinosaur
yes.
in the comics, and the dinosaur is glimpsed in the early episodes of the show. What did you think of the dinosaur?
It's good. Happy it was there. Happy to see it. At first I was like, I had a hazy memory because I kind of, when that scene comes on, I was like, oh, I know it's coming. And then I was like, is it a dragon in the comics or is it a dinosaur? I couldn't remember. And then I saw it and was like, yes, I remember now. And I don't think it's a spoiler either. It was on the cover of like every...
Right. If you buy like a Runaways collection, you will see a dinosaur.
Yeah. Also, they haven't paid it off in the show yet. You have no idea what goes on with that. And yeah, so that's exciting. I liked it. Why? Did you think it was bad?
No. I was just curious. I mean, I feel like that's probably the most kind of out there thing so far.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know. There's some other sort of like weird magic things that are also kind of over the top. But the dinosaur is probably the biggest like, you know, suspension of disbelief thing so far.
Yeah, but it's like a Looney Bins. That's going to be hard too, right? Because the background of all the characters and like their various abilities in the comic are quite disparate, and they have a lot of really complicated, really wacky backstories that play well in comics, but I don't know how it's going to work out in TV.
Right. I assume a lot of that's going to get cut out.
Yeah, probably. Or like maybe we'll never see the dinosaur again. But
the dinosaur, I think, will at least they seem like they're, you know, they're kind of like we're doing the dinosaur. Is my sense.
Yeah, it's good. It's a core part of the thing. You got to have the dinosaur.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm excited to keep watching it. And are they releasing it sequentially? Do you know, or is it like all available?
They haven't. I'm trying to see. Yeah, I actually don't know if it'll be, you know, dropping Netflix style or I would assume, this seems like a show that you should do, you know, that like because they're so like,
I found
like
the details. Hold on.
Oh, you did. Okay.
So first three episodes are on November 21st.
Of perfect. So what I've seen show is what you will see on November 21st.
Yeah, exactly. So you have a perfect analysis of whether you should waste your time on that first day.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's like, I really like that release strategy of like, you know, keeping some degree of like, you have to wait for the next episode.
Yeah.
And like having a week where you're like, what's going to happen? And I think this show especially could be perfect for that. Cause I think there's just like some really fun, like cliffhangers and twists and stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, by putting out three at once,
you get a little bit of the,
you can binge a little at the beginning.
Yeah. So check it out. Surprisingly good. Like I didn't really have high expectations for it. So I think it's going to be a hidden gem kind of in the
right,
original
right.
content world and in the superhero world.
I mean, I think like, because Hulu just hasn't done that many series, I think it'll probably get some attention just by being one of like Hulu's sort of first big series.
Yeah.
But I think yeah, I think it'll probably pick up steam as more people discover it too.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. All right. Well, that does it for that. Is anything else you wanted to leave us with? Are you looking forward to anything coming out? Are you going to spend your 16 hours on the plane watching anything?
I have downloaded onto my iPad the first few episodes of Peaky Blinders and then the movie Jaws, because I haven't rewatched Jaws in a long time.
Nice. All right. That'll take about, 10 hours?
Not yeah, even? Well, probably even less. But I have a bunch of books too, but no one cares about that. So
no, those are bad.
And I'm hoping to sleep. So
cool. This is the what was it? The how do you say his name? Cillian?
I think Killian.
Killian Murphy. That's how you say.
Yeah,
his name.
I love Killian Murphy.
Nice, cool. Let me know how that goes because I haven't seen it and I don't.
Yeah, maybe I'll talk about it. Not next week because I won't be around, but maybe the week after.
All right, sounds good. Cool. Yeah. Well, we'll have you back when you are back, and original content will continue. So same original content time, same original content channel. And we'll have guest hosts joining me here to talk about everything that's going on in streaming.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Yeah, bye for now.